This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. It's a pleasure to have on the broadcast today Mr. W.J. Simmons of Jackson, Mississippi. Bill Simmons is administrator of the Citizens Councils of America and editor of the movement's official magazine, The Citizen. Bill, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Dick. It's good to be with you.
Bill, I know you've just returned from a trip to California. Were you in the Los Angeles area during the recent rioting there?
I was in the Los Angeles area immediately following the rioting, Dick. I had two or three speaking engagements in San Diego and Los Angeles that had been previously arranged. I might mention here that Los Angeles was a good place to be away from during the rioting.
You were in Los Angeles, though, after the riots had been quelled and the people brought under control.
Yes, that's right. The afternoon and evening that I spent going through Watts was the day after the sniper firing had been stopped.
I know you spent quite a bit of time touring this vast area where the rioting occurred. And I know that you, like most of the rest of us, had formed a mental picture of what things would be like from the news reports which you'd seen and read and heard concerning the rioting. How did the actuality fit the mental image that you'd formed?
I was surprised by some of the things I noticed as a matter of general impression in this area. For one thing, I was struck, as you indicated, by the size of the area. It's really vast. There are about 500,000 colored citizens live in this area. Another thing that struck me was the lack of poverty, for there are obvious signs of even affluence in this area. There are numerous television aerials, automobiles parked along the curbs in front of houses. It bears not the slightest resemblance to what we normally think of as the vast Negro slums in Chicago and New York. As far as the specific sites of rioting, these surprised me somewhat too in that they were so scattered. There were several blocks where everything in the block virtually had been demolished. Then there would be a number of blocks where there was no sign of any damage. Then again, the rioting would spill over into adjoining areas, and here there would be an occasional store that's been broken into, looted, and burned.
But very little signs of damage to the homes. It was directed primarily at the business establishments?
As far as I know, there were no homes at all damaged unless there were very few that caught fire from burning stores. It was pretty interesting to me to see the some of the obvious signs of race hatred. And we read about reports of the Negroes chanting, "Whitey, whitey, kill him, and burn, baby, burn." Some of the signs of this were still left in the signs that had been scrawled on the store windows, such as "Negro owned" or "Blood brother," or some such thing as that.
Bill, in your tour through the riot area, did you notice any pattern in the looting and destruction? Were certain establishments picked out above others?
Yes, they were, very obviously. The prime targets were liquor stores, pawn shops, supermarkets, and furniture stores. These were looted rather thoroughly and then set afire. I might mention as one additional item of proof of what I mentioned earlier about the general affluence of the rioters, there were magazine pictures published in national magazines which showed these rioters, and they were without exception well-dressed.
and in many cases carrying color TV sets out of the establishments which were then burning.
That's right. They were carrying color TV sets, couches, and some were carrying shopping carts loaded with groceries.
The latest tally of deaths, injuries, and destruction from this Los Angeles outburst, more than 36 persons killed, some 900 injured, more than 4,000 arrests, 209 buildings demolished by fire, and another 790 or so damaged. Fire damage alone estimated at more than $175 million, and a cost for police and National Guard patrols in the area ranging to $500,000 a day. This is really a staggering toll. It's almost difficult to imagine the dollars and cents outlay and the loss of human life and the personal injury which resulted. What was the reaction that you noticed among the people with whom you met in California? Were they worried about this? Were they concerned about the potential for future trouble? Were they primarily concerned with getting this episode under control?
Well, they were concerned with both. They were concerned, of course, first of all, with getting this under control, and in this respect, they are solidly behind the local police and the action in using the National Guard to stop it. They are also deeply worried about the possibility of future outbreaks, because this really had one of the world's great cities on edge for an extended period of time.
Getting back to your tour through the Watts District, did you notice any particular mood of the people who were living in that area? Was there any instinctive sign of hatred directed toward the white man after the rioting had ended?
One of the most obvious things was that you could ride for miles and miles and never see a white face. Now, this is very strange to a visitor from the South who is accustomed to seeing white people and colored people intermingling on the streets and byways. Several people in California told me that it made them feel very creepy to drive through Watts or to go anywhere near it, and they just stayed away from it. Now, there were other signs that were very obvious of the results of the riot. For one thing, there were very, very few people on the streets. I recall seeing only two groups of any size gathered. One might be worth mentioning. It was a knot of perhaps 12, 15 Negroes who had gathered outside a pool hall. There were three police cars at the curb. The officers in these cars had their guns leveled in their direction. And one officer was on the sidewalk talking with them, and he had his riot shotgun pointed directly at these Negroes. They were standing there talking about something. I didn't tarry to see, of course, but this, of course, is obviously not a normal condition.
If something like this were to happen in the South, in fact, whenever some incident has broken out, even on a very small scale in the Deep South, say in Alabama or Mississippi or Louisiana, we are told both by people within and without our region that we should be concerned about our image. Did you notice any concern on the part of the people of California, any worry about their image to the rest of the nation?
Well, first let's get a couple of basic premises straight, Dick. First, there is a vast difference between this type of outbreak and the incidents that have occurred in the South, both in size and in nature. Now, this one in Los Angeles was spontaneous and indigenous to the country. Those that have occurred in the South have been in each case the direct result of incitement and fomenting by so-called civil rights agitators. Thus, we have an entirely different situation to begin with. Secondly, the people in California could not have cared less about any image. They were concerned not with such superficialities as that. They were concerned with the basic problem of personal safety on the streets and in their own homes.
Did the people with whom you talked generally approve of the action by the police and National Guard in bringing the situation under control?
Yes, they were very much in support of the police and the National Guard. In fact, the hero of California today is Chief William H. Park of the Los Angeles Police Department.
Do you believe that the trouble which recently confronted the people in Southern California might have left them with a new understanding of the race problems faced by other parts of the nation?
Yes, I don't see how it's avoidable that this would leave them with a new understanding. It's rather pitiful, it was to me in some ways, to see the reaction of these people, some of these people who had been led by liberal commentators to have a guilt feeling for all this. I heard one man say, well, I've never felt prejudice in my heart before, but I do now. Of course, it's not prejudice. It's the instinct for self-preservation. But they are coming to a fuller understanding of what the rest of the country is facing.
The major racial upheavals in the nation this summer have been in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in Springfield, Massachusetts, elsewhere in the North, in areas which have had for many years all kinds of civil rights laws on the books, where the Negro has been courted by various political factions, and where the civil rights laws and the so-called FEPC laws and such have been strenuously enforced in the past. Why would the difficulty erupt in the North and West rather than in the Deep South?
The answer is very simple, Dick, and I think Chief Parker of Los Angeles gave it. He said that such laws as this, giving preferential treatment, the constant barrage of propaganda directed at the Negroes, excusing them for their delinquencies and crime, had directly encouraged the Los Angeles riots.
In other words, it's your belief that Negroes, in many parts of the country at least, have been led to believe that they are above the law, and that this basic attitude must be changed in order to restore a climate of law in many parts of the country.
That is right. They have been led to believe that that there are two sides of the law, the more favorable applying to them.
Bill, where is this all going to end? Do you have any ideas on that?
Dick, I hate to be pessimistic, but I think as far as the large cities of the North and West are concerned, that unless there is a distinct change from the public policy as enunciated now by leaders at the federal level, that people in these cities are going to face some very, very dangerous and troublous times.
Bill, thank you very much for being with us. Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been W.J. Simmons, Administrator of the Citizens Councils of America. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.